You're listening to Asia First Weekend Edition with me, Justine Moss. A very good morning to you. Crossing now to our US Bureau Chief, Simon Marks in Washington, D.C. Hi, Simon.
Hello, Justine.
Thanks for joining us here once again in Singapore. Let's talk first about President Trump's first in-person event held since he was diagnosed with the COVID-19. The South Lawn of the White House, we did touch on it yesterday about how he was going to have around 2,000 people. Tell us more about that event.
Yeah, well, he didn't have 2,000. It looks like it was somewhere between 500 and 600 people that were present for Donald Trump's balcony speech. We were told that he was going to speak for about half an hour. In the event, he only spoke for about 18 minutes. And there are still questions about the precise nature of his medical condition. We've not had any kind of information from the president's physician now for 2 days. We don't know whether he is still testing positive for COVID-19 or not. We know that 24 hours ago, as you and I discussed, he disclosed that he was still infectious in an interview on the Fox News channel, but that was on Friday night here in the United States. Now it's Saturday night. We don't know precisely whether that's changed or not. There seems to be a real gap on the White House providing any kind of information at the moment about his health, and still a continuing refusal to answer the pivotal question that journalists here are asking, which is, when did President Trump last test negative for COVID-19, and when did he first test positive? Because the timeline for all of this has been very uncertain. Nevertheless, he did appear here on that balcony overlooking the South Lawn of the White House. This was described by the White House as a peaceful protest by supporters of the president who say that they have concerns about law and order in America's cities. It looked to all intents and purposes like a campaign event. Many of them were carrying Trump banners. There were more face masks, by the way, on display than we usually have seen at the White House, although no one was engaged in safe distancing, and there were quite a few people in the crowd not wearing face masks. But this issue as to whether it was a campaign event or not is material, because the White House is not supposed to be used for campaign events. We had this conversation a few weeks ago when President Trump decided to make his convention address from the White House, very controversially. And the same questions are being asked here tonight. This looked like an avowedly campaign-style rally, and the White House is simply saying, well, no, it wasn't. But it's very hard to know how you can justify that, given the tone of the president's remarks, insisting that Joe Biden needs to lose this presidential election, because otherwise he is going to bring socialism and communism to the United States, which, of course, is very much not part of Joe Biden's plan. But that is the way in which President Trump and other Republicans characterize what the Democrats are planning to do should they win in November. The president was wearing a face mask when he came out on the balcony, but he took it off to make his speech. And again, we simply don't know. Is he in any sense isolating inside the White House? He appears to have been back in the Oval Office a little bit yesterday. No indication that that took place today. He says that he is planning a whole series of rallies over the course of the next few days. We think that he's going to be in Florida, Pennsylvania, and Iowa next week. And now there's no second presidential debate next Thursday, as we all expected. It got cancelled by the Commission on Presidential Debates 24 hours ago after the president said he wouldn't participate in a virtual event. He is reportedly in negotiations with NBC here to participate in a town hall meeting on Thursday night. As we reported yesterday, Joe Biden is participating in a town hall meeting that night on ABC, so we may end up having dueling town meetings on two of the three broadcast networks here.
Yeah, as you said, he's going to be having some rallies next week, such as Florida, I believe, on Monday. Do you think, I mean, with that time in hospital and sort of not being able to get out there with those rallies that he had planned, plus a presidential debate, of course, that he is needing to play catch-up, Simon, at the moment with Joe Biden's slim lead in the polls?
Oh, absolutely. There's no question about it. I mean, last week was a lost week for the Trump campaign. I mean, and that was because it wasn't just President Trump who was sidelined by COVID-19 and his hospitalization and then return to the White House. His campaign manager, Bill Stepien, has been isolating at home with COVID-19. A whole host of people involved in the campaign, including Ronna McDaniel, the chair of the Republican National Committee, all of them are off the battlefield at a critical moment. I mean, we're less than a month away from the election. Joe Biden, in most polls, it has a double-digit lead over President Trump. The president's got to do something dramatic to turn this around, and to turn around not just his own campaign for re-election, but to do something to help other Republicans who are battling for seats in the House of Representatives, for the Senate, for the gubernatorial positions that are open in several states this election cycle. So he's got to try and return to the campaign trail as quickly as possible. That's definitely what he plans to do. That's what he's indicating he's going to do. And yet there are enormous questions still about his health and how safe it is for people to get on a plane and travel with him. Joe Biden admonished reporters today when he was asked about President Trump's plan to return to rallies all over the country. And he said to reporters, well, I wouldn't go. And if you go, you better make sure that you've got face masks and you're a good long way away from him. And that, again, plays into this sort of information vacuum that exists from the White House as to whether he is cleared to participate in these kind of events and can do so without running the risk of them turning into what Dr. Anthony Fauci referred to as a super spreader event like the one that happened at the White House when the president introduced his Supreme Court nominee to the public. That was clearly, Dr. Fauci says, that was definitely now a super spreader event. And the fear, of course, is that these rallies where people don't wear face masks and they're not socially distanced and there are Trump officials who have already contracted COVID-19 and may still be infectious are potentially pretty dangerous places to be.
So, Simon, how tight is it in some of those swing states? Are we looking at, you know, it could go either way?
Yes. I mean, the swing states could always go either way, which is precisely why they are battleground swing states. They are the states that sometimes vote Democrat, sometimes vote Republican, but always decide the outcome of the election. I mean, if you're Joe Biden right now and you're looking at the poll of polls in all of these states, you are feeling pretty comfortable. He's 3.7% up in Florida, a state where just a couple of weeks ago it was neck and neck. He's 7% up in Pennsylvania. And remember, it was in the Philadelphia suburbs of Pennsylvania back in 2016 that many people believe Donald Trump won the presidential election. Well, if Joe Biden really has a 7% advantage in Pennsylvania, that's all over. He's nearly 7 percentage points clear of Donald Trump in Michigan. He's 5 points up in Wisconsin. Even in Arizona, he's more than 2.5 percentage points up over Donald Trump. And there is a Senate candidate that the Republicans have in Arizona, Martha McSally, who was put in to replace John McCain when he passed away by the governor of Arizona. She is almost certainly going down to defeat against former astronaut Mark Kelly, who is running for the Democrats. That's definitely a seat that the Democrats expect to pick up in Arizona. I mean, the New York Times today has published an article in which it is arguing that Joe Biden's advantage in many of these swing states is so substantial that Republicans are now really beginning to fear what is taking place, trailing, they say, not just in the must-win battlegrounds, but in the words of the newspaper, repelling independents all over to the all over the country, to the point where Joe Biden is coming closer to Donald Trump in solidly Republican states like Montana, Kansas, and Missouri, places you don't even think of as being battleground states. There's also considerable interest in Texas. And the other difficulty that Donald Trump has had has nothing to do with COVID-19. It has to do with money. His campaign has had to suspend most of its television advertising in the Midwest, critical parts of the country where he would hope to be competitive with Joe Biden, because the campaign war chest is empty. And one of the questions that we've all been waiting for the answer to now for several weeks is, where did all the money go? And I think there is still considerable interest in what is going to happen with regards to the president's former campaign manager, Brad Parscale. You may remember that he was hospitalized a few days ago after threatening suicide at home. He's the man who spent all the money over an 18-month period. And to get to 3 weeks out from a presidential election and not to be able to afford to spend money on television advertising in battleground states is monumentally problematic. I mean, you can't, if you're not competitive on the air, on local television, in those battleground states with your opponent, you're going to have a real problem getting your vote out on November the 3rd.
Only 3 weeks away. You're listening to Asia First Weekend Edition with me, Justine Moss. I'm speaking with Simon Marks, our US Bureau Chief in Washington, D.C. Simon, a Texas judge, we hear, has blocked an order from the governor in Texas allowing only one absentee vote drop-off point per county. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, we're seeing things like this going on all over the place, but the Texas example is particularly egregious. Governor Greg Abbott of Texas is a fervent supporter of President Trump and a close friend of his. And in an election year in which large numbers of people are going to be voting by post, far more than would usually be voting by post, and far more people will be voting absentee, that means that their ballot paper is delivered to their house. You've got a couple of choices once you fill that ballot paper out. My wife's has actually just arrived here in Washington, D.C. So she can fill it out tonight and she can drop it in the mail and send it by post, or she can fill it out and she can walk up the road. We're three blocks south of our local community center, and she can drop it off with an election official at the community center. So there's plenty of choice here in Washington, D.C. But if you take a look at what the governor of Texas has suggested, he wants only one drop box for absentee ballots, so the box where you drop the vote in, for each county. And some of these counties in Texas are huge. I mean, you know, 100 square miles easily, maybe even larger. So various groups took a lawsuit out to try and stop this because they argued that it was a voter suppression attempt by the governor of Texas, Donald Trump's political supporter. And the judge in the case agreed, saying that older and disabled voters, particularly living in the largest and most populous counties of the city, would have to travel further distances to more crowded ballot return centers, where they would then be at an increased risk also of being infected by COVID-19 in order to exercise their right to vote. Now, we're waiting to find out whether Governor Abbott is going to appeal this decision. Democrats in Texas insist it's common sense. And the chairman of the Democratic Party in Texas said that it ought to be a shock to everyone that it was even necessary to go to court and try and stop this from taking place. But it does give you an indication of just how complicated this election may prove to be, given that, remember, it's not nationally organized. It's up to the 50 states all over the country and their individual governors to decide how to organize their elections. And that means that behind the scenes, all sorts of odd stuff can be taking place. If you're a Republican state, to try and suppress Democrat votes, or if you're a Democrat state, to try and suppress Republican votes. And every single vote is obviously going to count in a closely fought election. So that's why these issues are coming to the fore so rapidly now.
Simon, just finally, I do have to ask you, of course, we've seen Donald Trump at the event at the White House, your time today. Melania Trump, I mean, she was also diagnosed with COVID-19, and she hasn't been seen since she was diagnosed. Was she visible today at all?
No. I mean, she's been doing, I know this is going to come as a shock, but I mean, she's been doing what everybody apart from the President of the United States does when they get diagnosed with COVID-19. She's been isolating in the family quarters of the White House. There's been no public appearance. She wasn't, for example, on deck when President Trump returned to the White House from Walter Reed Medical Center on Monday. She said that she didn't want to visit the president at Walter Reed because she didn't want to expose members of her own staff to the COVID-19 that she had been diagnosed with. Her quarantine would be coming up for conclusion very soon. She did tweet today, a couple of hours ago, talking about World Mental Health Day. Then she tweeted a couple of days ago. So she's been present on social media, but she's been making it very clear that she wanted to do all of this responsibly and sensibly and isolate and not run the risk of infecting others, particularly those people working not just in political roles at the White House, but in support roles, the butlers, the valets, the cooks, the Secret Service agents. You know, her husband has decided to go in a different direction, but my expectation is that we'll start seeing the First Lady at various events at some point over the next few days.
Very responsible behaviour. Simon, always a pleasure to speak to you in Washington, D.C. Thank you so much for your time in Asia First Weekend Edition.
Thanks, Justine. Have a great week.
You too.